be troubled, said John, and keep my vows. Catelyn. Her son's crown was fresh from the forge, and it seemed to Catelyn Stark that the weight of it pressed heavy on Rob's head. The ancient crown of the Kings of Winter had been lost 3 centuries ago, yielded up to Aegon the Conqueror when Torrhen Stark knelt in submission. What Aegon had done with it, no man could say. Lord Hustus Smith had done his work well, and Rob's crown looked much as the other was said to have looked in the tales told of the Stark kings of old. An open circlet of hammered bronze, incised with the runes of the first men, surmounted by 9 black iron spikes wrought in the shape of longswords. Of gold and silver and gemstones, it had none. Bronze and iron were the metals of winter, dark and strong to fight against the cold. As they waited in Riverrun's great hall for the prisoner to be brought before them, she saw Rob push back the crown so it rested upon the thick auburn mop of his hair. Moments later, he moved it forward again. Later, he gave it a quarter turn, as if that might make it sit more easily on his brow. It is no easy thing to wear a crown, Catelyn thought, watching, especially for a boy of 15 years. When the guards brought in the captive, Rob called for his sword. Oliver Frey offered it up hilt first, and her son drew the blade and laid it bare across his knees, a threat plain for all to see. Your Grace, here is the man you asked for, announced Robin Rhaegar, captain of the Tully Household Guard. Kneel before the king, Lannister, Theon Greyjoy shouted. Sir Robin forced the prisoner to his knees. He did not look a lion, Catelyn reflected. This Sir Cleos Frey was the son of the Lady Jenna, who was sister to Lord Tywin Lannister. But he had none of the fabled Lannister beauty, the fair hair and green eyes. Instead, he had inherited the stringy brown locks, weak chin, and thin face of his sire, Sir Eamon Frey, old Lord Walder's second son. His eyes were pale and watery, and he could not seem to stop blinking, but perhaps that was only the light. The cells below River Run were dark and damp, and these days crowded as well. Rise, Sir Cleos. Her son's voice was not as icy as his father's would have been, but he did not sound a boy of 15 either. War had made a man of him before his time. Morning light glimmered faintly against the edge of the steel across his knees. Yet it was not the sword that made Sir Cleos Frey anxious. It was the beast. Greywind, her son had named him. A dire wolf large as any elk hound, lean and smoke dark, with eyes like molten gold. When the beast padded forward and sniffed at the captive knight, every man in the hall could smell the scent of fear. Sir Cleos had been taken during the battle in the Whispering Wood, where Grey Wind had ripped out the throats of 6 men. The knight scrambled up, edging away with such alacrity that some of the watchers laughed aloud.
Thank you, my lord.
Your grace, barked Lord Umber, the Great John, ever the loudest of Rob's northern bannermen, and the truest and fiercest as well, or so he insisted. He had been the first to proclaim her son king in the north, and he would brook no slight to the honor of his new-made sovereign.
Your grace, Sir Cleos corrected hastily, pardons.
He is not a bold man, this one, Catelyn thought, more of a Frey than a Lannister, in truth. His cousin the Kingslayer would have been a much different matter. They would never have gotten that honorific through Sir Jaime Lannister's perfect teeth. I brought you from your cell to carry my message to your cousin, Cersei Lannister, in King's Landing. You'll travel under a peace banner, with 30 of my best men to escort you. Sir Cleos was visibly relieved.
Then I should be most glad to bring his grace's message to the queen.
Understand, Rob said. I'm not giving you your freedom,
Your grandfather, Lord Walden, pledged me his support, and that of House Frey. Many of your cousins and uncles rode with us in the Whispering Wood, but you chose to fight beneath the Lion's Banner. That makes you a Lannister, not a Frey. I want your pledge, on your honor as a knight, that after you deliver my message, you'll return with the Queen's reply and resume your captivity. Sir Cleos answered at once, I do so vow. Every man in this hall has heard you, warned Catelyn's brother, Sir Edmure Tully, who spoke for River Run and the Lords of the Trident in the place of their dying father. If you do not return, the whole realm will know you forsworn. I will do as I pledged, Sir Cleos replied stiffly. What is this message? An offer of peace. Rob stood, longsword in hand. Grey Wind moved to his side. The hall grew hushed. Tell the Queen Regent that if she meets my terms, I will sheathe this sword and make an end to the war between us. In the back of the hall, Catelyn glimpsed the tall, gaunt figure of Lord Rickard Carstark shoved through a rank of guards and out the door. No one else moved. Rob paid the disruption no mind. Olivar, the paper, he commanded. The squire took his longsword and handed up a rolled parchment. Rob unrolled it. First, the Queen must release my sisters and provide them with transport by sea from King's Landing to White Harbor. It is to be understood that Sansa's betrothal to Joffrey Baratheon is at an end. When I receive word from my castellan that my sisters have returned unharmed to Winterfell, I will release the Queen's cousins, the squire Willem Lannister and your brother Tion Frey, and give them safe escort to Castle Rock or wheresoever she desires them delivered. Catelyn Stark wished she could read the thoughts that hid behind each face, each furrowed brow and pair of tightened lips. Secondly, my lord father's bones will be returned to us so he may rest beside his brother and sister in the crypts beneath Winterfell as he would have wished. The remains of the men of his household guard who died in his service at King's Landing must also be returned. Living men had gone south and cold bones would return. Ned had the truth of it, she thought. His place was at Winterfell. He said as much. But would I hear him? No. Go, I told him. You must be Robert's hand, for the good of our house, for the sake of our children. My doing. Mine. No other. Third, my father's great sword, Ice, will be delivered to my hand here at River Run. She watched her brother, Sir Edmure Tully, as he stood with his thumbs hooked over his sword belt, his face as still as stone. Fourth, the Queen will command her father, Lord Tywin, to release those knights and lords bannermen of mine that he took captive in the battle on the Green Fork of the Trident. Once he does so, I shall release my own captives taken in the Whispering Wood and the Battle of the Camps, save Jaime Lannister alone, who will remain my hostage for his father's good behavior. She studied Theon Greyjoy's sly smile, wondering what it meant. That young man had a way of looking as though he knew some secret jest that only he was privy to. Catelyn had never liked it. Lastly, King Joffrey and the Queen Regent must renounce all claims to dominion over the North. Henceforth, we are no part of their realm, but a free and independent kingdom as of old. Our domain shall include all the Stark lands north of the Neck, and in addition, the lands watered by the River Trident and its vassal streams, bounded by the Golden Tooth to the west and the Mountains of the Moon to the east. The King in the North! Boomed Great John Umber, a ham-sized fist hammering at the air as he shouted, Stark! Stark! The King in the North! Rob rolled up the parchment again. Maester Wyman has drawn a map showing the borders we claim. You shall have a copy for the Queen. Lord Tywin must withdraw beyond these borders and cease his raiding, burning, and pillaging. The Queen Regent and her son shall make no claims to taxes, incomes, nor service from my people, and shall free my lords and knights from all oaths of fealty, vows, pledges, debts, and obligations owed to the Iron Throne and the Houses Baratheon and Lannister. Additionally, the Lannisters shall deliver 10 highborn hostages to be mutually agreed upon as a pledge of peace. These I will treat as honored guests, according to their station. So long as the terms of this pact are abided with faithfully, I shall release 2 hostages every year and return them safely to their families. Rob tossed the rolled parchment at the knight's feet. There are the terms. If she meets them, I'll give her peace. If not, he whistled, and Grey Wind moved forward, snarling, I'll give her another Whispering Wood. Stark! The Great John roared again, and now other voices took up the cry. Stark! Stark! King in the North! The dire wolf threw back his head and howled. Sir Cleos had gone the color of curdled milk. The Queen shall hear your message, your grace. Good, Rob said. Sir Robin, see that he has a good meal and clean clothing. He's to ride at first light.
As you command, your grace,
Sir Robin Rygar replied.
Then we are done.
The assembled knights and lords bannermen bent their knees as Rob turned to leave, Grey Wind at his heels. Oliver Frey scrambled ahead to open the door. Catelyn followed them out, her brother at her side. You did well, she told her son in the gallery that led from the rear of the hall, though that business with the wolf was japery more befitting a boy than a king. Rob scratched Grey Wind behind the ear. Did you see the look on his face, Mother? He asked, smiling. What I saw was Lord Carstark walking out. As did I. Rob lifted off his crown with both hands and gave it to Olivar. Take this thing back to my bedchamber. At once, Your Grace. The squire hurried off. I'll wager there were others who felt the same as Lord Carstark, her brother Edmure declared. How can we talk of peace while the Lannisters spread like a pestilence over my father's domains, stealing his crops and slaughtering his people? I say again, we ought to be marching on Harrenhal. We lack the strength, Rob said, though unhappily. Edmure persisted. Do we grow stronger sitting here? Our host dwindles every day. And whose doing is that? Catelyn snapped at her brother. It had been at Edmure's insistence that Rob had given the river lords leave to depart after his crowning, each to defend his own lands. Sir Mark Piper and Lord Carl Vance had been the first to go. Lord Jonas Bracken had followed, vowing to reclaim the burnt shell of his castle and bury his dead. And now Lord Jason Malister had announced his intent to return to his seat at Seaguard, still mercifully untouched by the fighting. You cannot ask my river lords to remain idle while their fields are being pillaged and their people put to the sword, Sir Edmure said. But Lord Carstark is a Northman. It would be an ill thing if he were to leave us. I'll speak with him, said Rob. He lost 2 sons in the Whispering Wood. Who can blame him if he does not want to make peace with their killers, with my father's killers? More bloodshed will not bring your father back to us, or Lord Rickard's sons, Catelyn said. An offer had to be made, though a wiser man might have offered sweeter terms. Any sweeter, and I would have gagged. Her son's beard had grown in redder than his auburn hair. Rob seemed to think it made him look fierce, royal, older. But bearded or no, he was still a youth of 15, and wanted vengeance no less than Rickard Carstark. It had been no easy thing to convince him to make even this offer, poor as it was. Cersei Lannister will never consent to trade your sisters for a pair of cousins. It's her brother she'll want, as you know full well. She had told him as much before, but Catelyn was finding that kings do not listen half so attentively as sons. I can't release the Kingslayer, not even if I wanted to. My lords would never abide it. Your lords made you their king, and can unmake me just as easy. If your crown is the price we must pay to have Arya and Sansa return safely, we should pay it willingly. Half your lords would like to murder Lannister in his cell. If he should die while he's your prisoner, men will say that he well deserved it. Rob finished. And your sisters? Catelyn asked sharply. Will they deserve their deaths as well? I promise you, if any harm comes to her brother, Cersei will pay us back blood for blood. Lannister won't die, Rob said. No one so much as speaks to him without my warrant. He has food, water, clean straw, more comfort than he has any right to. But I won't free him, not even for Arya and Sansa. Her son was looking down at her, Catelyn realized. Was it war that made him grow so fast, she wondered, or the crown they had put on his head? Are you afraid to have Jaime Lannister in the field again? Is that the truth of it? Grey Wind growled, as if he sensed Rob's anger, and Edmure Tully put a brotherly hand on Catelyn's shoulder. Cat, don't. The boy has the right of this. Don't call me the boy, Rob said, running on his uncle, his anger spitting out at once on poor Edmure, who had only meant to support him. I'm almost a man grown, and a king. Your king, sir. And I don't fear Jaime Lannister. I defeated him once. I'll defeat him again if I must, only... He pushed a fall of hair out of his eyes and gave a shake of the head. I might have been able to trade the Kingslayer for father, but not for the girls. Her voice was icy quiet. The girls are not important enough, are they? Rob made no answer, but there was hurt in his eyes, blue eyes, Tully eyes, eyes she had given him. She had wounded him, but he was too much his father's son to admit it. That was unworthy of me, she told herself. Gods be good, what is to become of me? He's doing his best, trying so hard, I know it. I see it, and yet I have lost my Ned, the rock my life was built on. I could not bear to lose the girls as well. I'll do all I can for my sisters, Rob said. If the Queen has any sense, she'll accept my terms. If not, I'll make her rue the day she refused me. Plainly, he'd had enough of the subject. Mother, are you certain you will not consent to go to the twins? You would be farther from the fighting, and you could acquaint yourself with Lord Frey's daughters to help me choose my bride when the war is done. He wants me gone, Catelyn thought wearily. Kings are not supposed to have mothers, it would seem, and I tell him things he does not want to hear. You're old enough to decide which of Lord Walder's girls you prefer without your mother's help, Rob. Then go with Theon. He leaves on the morrow. He'll help the Malisters escort that lot of captives to Seaguard and then take ship for the Iron Islands. You could find a ship as well and be back at Winterfell with the moon's turn, if the winds are kind. Bran and Rickon need you. And you do not. Is that what you mean to say? My lord father has little enough time remaining him. So long as your grandfather lives, my place is at River Run with him. I could command you to go. As king, I could. Catelyn ignored that. I'll say again. I would sooner you sent someone else to Pike and kept Theon close to you. Who better to treat with Balon Greyjoy than his son? Jason Malister, offered Catelyn. Titus Blackwood. Stevron Frey. Anyone, but not Theon. Her son squatted beside Grey Wind, ruffling the wolf's fur and incidentally avoiding her eyes. Theon's fought bravely for us. I told you how he saved Bran from those wildlings in the Wolf's Wood. If the Lannisters won't make peace, I'll have need of Lord Greyjoy's longships. You'll have them sooner if you keep his son as hostage. he's been a hostage half his life.
For good reason, Catelyn said. Balin Greyjoy is not a man to be trusted. He wore a crown himself, remember, if only for a season. He may aspire to wear one again. Rob stood.
I will not grudge him that. If I'm the king in the north, let him be king of the Iron Islands, if that's his desire. I'll give him a crown, gladly, so long as he helps us bring down the Lannisters.
Rob,
I'm sending Theon. Good day, Mother. Grey Wind, come.
Rob walked off briskly, the direwolf padding beside him. Catelyn could only watch him go. Her son, and now her king. How queer that felt. Command, she had told him, back in Moat Cailin. And so he did. I'm going to visit Father, she announced abruptly. Come with me, Edmure. I need to have a word with those new bowmen Sir Desmond is training. I'll visit him later. If he still lives, Catelyn thought. But she said nothing. Her brother would sooner face battle than that sick room. The shortest way to the central keep, where her father lay dying, was through the guard's wood, with its grass and wild flowers and thick stands of elm and redwood. A wealth of rustling leaves still clung to the branches of the trees, all ignorant of the word the White Raven had brought to River Run a fortnight past. Autumn had come, the conclave had declared, but the guards had not seen fit to tell the winds and woods as yet. For that Catelyn was duly grateful. Autumn was always a fearful time, with the spectre of winter looming ahead. Even the wisest man never knew whether his next harvest would be his last. Hoster Tully, Lord of Riverrun, lay abed in his solar, with his commanding view to the east, where the rivers Tumblestone and Red Fork met beyond the walls of his castle. He was sleeping when Catelyn entered, his hair and beard as white as his feather bed, his once portly frame turned small and frail by the death that grew within him. Beside the bed, still dressed in mail hauberk and travel-stained cloak, sat her father's brother, the Blackfish. His boots were dusty and spattered with dried mud. Does Rob know your return, Uncle? Sir Brynden Tully was Rob's eyes and ears, the commander of his scouts and outriders.
No, I came here straight from my stables when they told me the king was holding court. His grace will want to hear my tidings in private first, I think.
The Blackfish was a tall, lean man, grey of hair and precise in his movements, his clean-shaven face lined and windburnt.
How is he?
He asked. And she knew he did not mean Rob. Much the same. The maester gives him dream wine and milk of the puppy for his pain, so he sleeps most of the time and eats too little. He seems weaker with each day that passes.
Does he speak?
Yes, but there is less and less sense to the things he says. He talks of his regrets, of unfinished tasks, of people long dead and times long past. Sometimes he does not know what season it is, or who I am. Once he called me by Mother's name.
He misses her still, Sir Brynden answered. You have her face. I can see it in your cheekbones and your jaw.
You remember more of her than I do. It has been a long time. She seated herself on the bed and brushed away a strand of fine white hair that had fallen across her father's face.
Each time I ride out, I wonder if I shall find him alive or dead on my return.
Despite their quarrels, there was a deep bond between her father and the brother she had once disowned. Well, at least you made your peace with him. They sat for a time in silence until Catelyn raised her head. You spoke of tidings that Rob needed to hear. Lord Hoster moaned and rolled onto his side, almost as if he had heard. Brynden stood.
Come outside. Best if we do not wake him.
She followed him out onto the stone balcony that jutted three-sided from the solar like the prow of a ship. Her uncle glanced up, frowning.
You can see it by day now. My men call it the Red Messenger. But what is the message?
Catelyn raised her eyes to where the faint red line of the comet traced a path across the deep blue sky like a long scratch across the face of God. The great John told Rob that the old gods have unfurled a red flag of vengeance for Ned. Edmure thinks it's an omen of victory for River Run. He sees a fish with a long tail in the Tully collars, red against blue. She sighed. I wish I had their faith. Crimson is a Lannister collar.
That thing's not crimson, Sir Brynden said, nor Tully red. The mud red of the river. That's blood up there, child, smeared across the sky.
Our blood or theirs?
Was there ever a war where only one side bled?
Her uncle gave a shake of the head.
The riverlands are awash with blood, and flame all around the god's eye. The fighting has spread south to the Blackwater, and north across the Trident, almost to the Twins. Mark Paper and Carol Vance have won some small victories, and their southern lordling, Beric Dondarrion, has been raiding the raiders, falling upon Lord Tywin's foraging parties and vanishing back into the woods. It is said that Sir Burton Crakehall was boasting that he'd slain Dondarrion until he led his column into one of Lord Beric's traps and got every man of them killed. Some of Ned's guards from King Landing are with this Lord Beric, Catelyn recalled. May the guards preserve them.
Dondarrion and this red priest who rides with him are clever enough to preserve themselves, if tales be true, her uncle said. But your father's bannerman made a sadder tale. Rob should never have let them go. They've scattered like quail, each man trying to protect his own. And it's folly, Cat, folly. Jonas Bracken was wounded in the fighting amidst the ruins of his castle, and his nephew Hendry slain. Titus Blackwoods swept the Lannisters off his lands, but they took every cow and pig and speck of green and left him nothing to defend but Raven Tree Hall and a scorched desert. Derry men recaptured their lord's keep, but held it less than a fortnight before Gregor Clegane descended on them and put the whole garrison to the sword, even their lord.
Catelyn was horror-struck. Derry was only a child.
Aye, and the last of his line as well. The boy would have brought a fine ransom. But what does gold mean to a frothing dog like Gregor Clegane? That beast's head would make a noble gift for all the people of the realm, I vow.
Catelyn knew Sir Gregor's evil reputation, yet still... Don't speak to me of heads, uncle. Cersei has mounted Ned's on a spike above the walls of the Red Keep and left it for the crows and flies. Even now, it was hard for her to believe that he was truly gone. Some nights she would wake in darkness, half asleep, and for an instant expect to find him there beside her. Clegane is no more than Lord Tywin's catspaw. For Tywin Lannister, Lord of Castle Rock, Warden of the West, father to Queen Cersei, Sir Jaime the Kingslayer, and Tyrion the Imp, and grandfather to Joffrey Baratheon, the new crown boy king, was the true danger, Catelyn believed.
True enough, Sir Brynden admitted, and Tywin Lannister is no man's fool. He sits safe behind the walls of Harrenhal, feeding his host on our harvest and burning what he does not take. Gregor is not the only dog he's loosed. Sir Aemery Lorch is in the field as well, and some sellsword out of Cahor who'd sooner maim a man than kill him. I've seen what they leave behind them. Whole villages put to the torch, women raped and mutilated, butchered children left unburied to draw wolves and wild dogs. It would sicken even the dead.
When Edmure hears this, he will rage.
And that will be just as Lord Tywin desires. Even terror has its purpose, Cat. Lannister wants to provoke us to battle.
Rob is likely to give him that wish, Catelyn said, fretful. He is restless as a cat sitting here,
and Edmure and the great John and the others will urge him on. Her son had won two great victories, smashing Jaime Lannister in the Whispering Wood and routing his leadless hosts outside the walls of Riverrun in the Battle of the Camps. But from the way some of his bannermen spoke of him, he might have been Aegon the Conqueror reborn. Brynden Blackfish arched a bushy grey eyebrow.
More fool thee. My force rule of war, Cat, never give the enemy his wish. Lord Tywin would like to fight on a field of his own choosing. He wants us to march on Harrenhal. Harrenhal.
Every child of the Trident knew the tales told of Harrenhal, the vast fortress that King Harren the Black had raised beside the waters of God's Eye 300 years past, when the Seven Kingdoms had been Seven Kingdoms, and the Riverlands were ruled by the Iron Men from the islands. In his pride, Harren had desired the highest hall and tallest towers in all Westeros. 40 years it had taken, rising like a great shadow on the shore of the lake, while Harren's armies plundered his neighbors for stone, lumber, gold, and workers. Thousands of captives died in his quarries, chained to his sledges, or laboring on his five colossal towers. Men froze by winter and sweltered in summer. Weirwoods that had stood 3,000 years were cut down for beams and rafters. Harren had beggared the Riverlands and the Iron Islands alike to ornament his dream. And when at last Harrenhal stood complete, on the very day King Harren took up residence, Aegon the Conqueror had come ashore at King's Landing. Catelyn could remember hearing old Nan tell the story to her own children back at Winterfell.
And King Harren learned that thick walls and high towers are small use against dragons, the tale always ended, for dragons fly.
Harren and all his line had perished in the fires that engulfed his monstrous fortress, and every house that held Harrenhal since had come to misfortune. Strong it might be, but it was a dark place and cursed. I would not have Robb fight a battle in the shadow of that keep, Catelyn admitted.
Yet we must do something, Uncle.
And soon, her uncle agreed. I have not told you the worst of it, child. The men I sent west have brought back word that a new host is gathering at Casterly Rock.
Another Lannister army? The thought made her ill. Robb must be told at once. Who will command?
Sir Stafford Lannister, it said.
He turned to gaze out over the rivers, his red and blue cloak stirring in the breeze. Another nephew? The Lannisters of Castle Rock were a damnably large and fertile house.
Cousin, Sir Brynden corrected. A brother to Lord Tywin's late wife, so twice related. An old man and a bit of a dullard, but he has a son, Sir Devon, who is more formidable.
Then let us hope it is the father and not the son who takes his army into the field.
We have some time yet before we must face them. This lot will be sellswords, free riders, and green boys from the stews of Lannisport. Sir Stafford must see that they are armed and drilled before he dare risk battle, and make no mistake, Lord Tywin is not the Kingslayer. He will not rush in heedless. He will wait patiently for Sir Stafford to march before he stirs from behind the walls of Harrenhal.
Unless, said Catelyn.
Yes,
Sir Brynden prompted. Unless he must leave Harrenhal, she said, to face some other threat. Her uncle looked at her thoughtfully.
Lord Renly?
King Renly. If she would ask help from the man, she would need to grant him the style he had claimed for himself.
Perhaps, the Blackfish smiled, a dangerous smile. He'll want something, though.
He'll want what kings always want, she said. Homage.
Tyrion. Janus Slynt was a butcher's son, and he laughed like a man chopping meat.
More wine? Tyrion asked him.
I should not object, Lord Janus said, holding out his cup. He was built like a keg and had a similar capacity. I should not object at all. That's a fine red. From the arbor.
Dornish.
Tyrion gestured and his serving man poured. But for the servants, he and Lord Janus were alone in the small hall, at a small candlelit table surrounded by darkness.
Quite the find. Dornish wines are not often so rich.
Rich, said the big frog-faced man, taking a healthy gulp.
He was not a man for sipping, Janus Slynt. Tyrion had made a note of that at once.
Yes, rich. That's the very word I was searching for. The very word. You have a gift for words, Lord Tyrion, if I may say so. And you tell a droll tale. Droll, yes.
I'm pleased you think so. But I'm not a lord, as you are. A simple Tyrion will suffice for me, Lord Janus.
As you wish.
He took another swallow, dribbling wine on the front of his black satin doublet. He was wearing a cloth of gold half-cape fastened with a miniature spear, its point enameled in dark red, and he was well and truly drunk. Tyrion covered his mouth and belched politely. Unlike Lord Janus, he had gone easy on the wine, but he was very full. The first thing he had done after taking up residence in the Tower of the Hand was inquire after the finest cook in the city and take her into his service. This evening they had supped on oxtail soup, summer greens tossed with pecans, grapes, red fennel, and crumbled cheese, hot crab pie, spiced squash, and quails drowned in butter. Each dish had come with its own wine. Lord Janus allowed that he had never eaten half so well. No doubt that will change when you take your seat in Harrenhal, Tyrion said.
For a certainty, perhaps I should ask this cook of yours to enter my service. What do you say?
Wars have been fought over less, he said, and they both had a good long laugh. You're a bold man to take Harrenhal for your seat. Such a grim place, and huge, costly to maintain, and some say cursed as well.
Should I fear a pile of stone? He hooted at the notion. A bold man, you said. You must be bold to rise, as I have, to Harrenhal, yes. And why not? You know. You're a bold man too, I sense. Small, mayhap, but bold.
You are too kind. More wine?
No, truly, gods be damned, yes, why not? A bold man drinks his fill.
Truly, Tyrion filled Lord Slynt's cup to the brim. I have been glancing over the names you put forward to take your place as commander of the city watch.
Good men, fine men. Any of the six will do, but I choose Alardim. My right arm. Good man, loyal. Pick him, and you won't be sorry. If he pleases the king.
To be sure. Tyrion took a small sip of his own wine. I had been considering Sir Jaslyn Bywater. He's been captain on the Mudgate for 3 years, and he served with valor during Balon Greyjoy's rebellion. King Robert knighted him at Pike, and yet his name does not appear on your list.
Lord Janus Slynt took a gulp of wine and sloshed it around in his mouth for a moment before swallowing.
Bywater, well, brave man, to be sure, yet. He's rigid, that one, a queer dog. The men don't like him. A cripple, too, lost his hand at Pike. That's what got him knighted. A poor trade, if you ask me. A hand for a sir.
He laughed.
Sir Jaslyn thinks overmuch of himself and his honour, as I see it. You'll do better leaving that one where he is, my Tyrion. Aradim's the man for you.
Deem is little loved in the streets, I am told.
He's feared. That's better.
What was it I heard of him? Some trouble in a brothel?
That? Not his fault, Tyrion. No, he never meant to kill the woman. That was her own doing. He warned her to stand aside and let him do his duty.
Still, mothers and children, he might have expected she'd try to save the babe. Tyrion smiled. Have some of this cheese. It goes splendidly with the wine. Tell me, why did you choose Deem for that unhappy task?
A good commander knows his men, Tyrion. Some are good for one job, some for another. Doing for a babe, and her still on the tit, that takes a certain sort. Not every man'd do it. Even if it was only some whore and her whelp.
I suppose that's so, said Tyrion, hearing only some whore, and thinking of Shae and Tysha years ago, and all the other women who had taken his coin and his seed over the years. Slint went on, oblivious.
A hard man for a hard job, is Deem. Does as he's told, and never a word afterwards.
He cut a slice off the cheese.
This is fine. Sharp. Give me a good sharp knife and a good sharp cheese, and I'm a happy man.
Tyrion shrugged. Enjoy it while you can. With the Riverlands in flame and Renly King in Highgarden, good cheese will soon be hard to come by. So, who sent you after the whore's bastard? Lord Janus gave Tyrion a wary look, then laughed and wagged a wedge of cheese at him.
You're a sly one, Tyrion. So you could trick me, did you? It takes more than wine and cheese to make Janus Slint tell more than he should. I pride myself. Never a question, and never a word afterward, not with me.
As with Deem?
Just the same. You make him your commander when I'm off to Harrenhal, and you won't regret it.
Tyrion broke off a nibble of the cheese. It was sharp indeed, and veined with wine. Very choice. Whoever the king names will not have an easy time stepping into your armor, I can tell. Lord Mormont faces the same problem. Lord Janus looked puzzled.
I thought she was a lady, Mormont. Beds down with bears. That's the one?
It was her brother I was speaking of, Geo Mormont, the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. When I was visiting with him on the Wall, he mentioned how concerned he was about finding a good man to take his place. The Watch gets so few good men these days, Tyrion grinned. He'd sleep easier if he had a man like you, I imagine, or the valiant Alar Deem. Lord Janus roared.
Small chance of that.
One would think, Tyrion said, but life does take queer turns. Consider Eddard Stark, my lord. I don't suppose he ever imagined his life would end on the steps of Baelor Sept.
They were damn few as did.
Lord Janus allowed, chuckling. Tyrion chuckled too. A pity I wasn't there to see it. They say even Varys was surprised. Lord Janus laughed so loud his gut shook.
The spider, he said. Knows everything, they say. Well, he didn't know that.
How could he? Tyrion put the first hint of chill in his tone. He had helped persuade my sister that Stark should be pardoned, on the condition that he take the black.
Eh?
Janus Slint blinked vaguely at Tyrion. My sister, Cersei. Tyrion repeated, a shade more strongly, in case the fool had some doubt who he meant. The Queen Regent.
Yes.
Slint took a swallow.
As to that, well, the king commanded it, my lord. The king himself.
The king is 13, Tyrion reminded him.
Still, he is the king.
Slint's jowls quivered when he frowned.
The lord of the 7 kingdoms.
Well, one or two of them, at least, Tyrion said with a sour smile. Might I have a look at your spear?
My spear?
Lord Janus blinked in confusion. Tyrion pointed. The clasp that fastens your keep. Hesitantly, Lord Janus drew out the ornament and handed it to Tyrion. "We have goldsmiths in Lannisport who do better work," he opined. "The red enamel blood is a shade much, if you don't mind my saying. Tell me, my lord, did you drive the spear into the man's back yourself, or did you only give the command?"
"I gave the command, and I'd give it again. Lord Stark was a traitor."
The bald spot in the middle of Slint's head was beet red, and his cloth of gold cape had slithered off his shoulders onto the floor.
"The man tried to buy me."
"Little dreaming that you had already been sold." Slint slammed down his wine cup.
"Are you drunk? If you think, I will sit here and have my honor questioned."
"What honor is that? I do admit you made a better bargain than Sir Jaslyn. A lordship and a castle for a spear thrust in the back. And you didn't even need to thrust the spear."
He tossed the golden ornament back to Janus Slint. It bounced off his chest and clattered to the floor as the man rose.
"I mislike the tone of your voice, my lord. Imp, I am the Lord of Harrenhal and a member of the King's Council. Who are you to chastise me like this?"
Tyrion cocked his head sideways. "I think you know quite well who I am. How many sons do you have?"
"What are my sons to you, dwarf?"
"Dwarf?" His anger flashed. "You should have stopped at imp. I am Tyrion of House Lannister, and someday, if you have the sense the gods gave a sea slug, you will drop to your knees in thanks that it was me you had to deal with and not my lord father. Now, how many sons do you have?"
Tyrion could see the sudden fear in Janus Slint's eyes.
Three, my lord, and a daughter, please, my lord."
"You need not beg." He slid off his chair. "You have my word, no harm will come to them. The younger boys will be fostered out as squires. If they serve well and loyally, they may be knights in time. Let it never be said that House Lannister does not reward those who serve it. Your eldest son will inherit the title Lord Slint and this appalling sigil of yours." He kicked at the little golden spear and sent it skittering across the floor. "Lands will be found for him, and he can build a seat for himself. It will not be Harrenhal, but it will be sufficient. It will be up to him to make a marriage for the girl."
Janus Slint's face had gone from red to white. His jaws were quivering like mounds of suet.
"What do I mean to do with you?"
Tyrion let the oaf tremble for a moment before he answered.
"The Carrack Summer's Dream sails on the morning tide. Her master tells me she will call at Gulltown, the Three Sisters, the Isle of Skagos, and Eastwatch by the Sea. When you see Lord Commander Mormont, give him my fond regards and tell him that I have not forgotten the needs of the Night's Watch. I wish you long life and good service, my lord."
Once Janus Slint realized he was not to be summarily executed, color returned to his face. He thrust his jaw out.
"We will see about this, imp, dwarf. Perhaps it will be you on that ship. What do you think of that? Perhaps it will be you on the wall."
He gave a bark of anxious laughter.
"You and your threats, well, we will see. I am the king's friend, you know. We shall hear what Joffrey has to say about this. And Littlefinger, and the queen. Oh, yes, Janus Slint has a good many friends. We will see who goes sailing, I promise you. Indeed we will."
Slint spun on his heel like the watchman he'd once been and strode the length of the small hall, boots ringing on the stone. He clattered up the steps, threw open the door, and came face to face with a tall, lantern-jawed man in black breastplate and gold cloak. Strapped to the stump of his right wrist was an iron hand.
"Janus," he said, deep-set eyes glinting under a prominent brow ridge and a shock of salt-and-pepper hair. Six gold cloaks moved quietly into the small hall behind him as Janus Slint backed away.
Lord Slint, Tyrion called out, I believe you know Sir Jaslyn Bywater, our new commander of the City Watch.
We have a litter waiting for you, my lord, Sir Jaslyn told Slint. The docks are dark and distant, and the streets are not safe by night. Men? As the gold cloaks ushered out their one-time commander, Tyrion called Sir Jaslyn to his side and handed him a roll of parchment.
It's a long voyage, and Lord Slint will want for company. See that these six join him on the Summer's Dream.
Bywater glanced over the names and smiled. As you will.
There's one, Tyrion said quietly, Deem. Tell the captain it would not be taken amiss if that one should happen to be swept overboard before they reach Eastwatch.
I am told those northern waters are very stormy, my lord. Sir Jaslyn bowed and took his leave, his cloak rippling behind him. He trod on Slint's cloth of gold cape on his way. Tyrion sat alone, sipping at what remained of the fine, sweet Dornish wine. Servants came and went, clearing the dishes from the table. He told them to leave the wine. When they were done, Varys came gliding into the hall, wearing flowing lavender robes that matched his smell.
Oh, sweetly done, my good lord.
Then why do I have this bitter taste in my mouth? He pressed his fingers into his temples. I told them to throw Aladim into the sea. I am sorely tempted to do the same with you.
You might be disappointed by the result, Varys replied. The storms come and go, the waves crash overhead, the big fish eat the little fish, and I keep on paddling. Might I trouble you for a taste of the wine that Lord Slint enjoyed so much?
Tyrion waved at the flagon, frowning. Varys filled a cup.
Ah, sweet as summer.
He took another sip.
I hear the grapes singing on my tongue.
I wondered what that noise was. Tell the grapes to keep still. My head is about to split. It was my sister. That was what the oh-so-loyal Lord Janus refused to say. Cersei sent the gold cloaks to that brothel.
Varys tittered nervously. So he had known all along.
You left that part out,
Tyrion said accusingly.
Your very own sweet sister,
Varys said, so grief-stricken he looked close to tears.
It's a hard thing to tell a man, my lord. I was fearful how you might take it. Can you forgive me?
No, Tyrion snapped. Damn you. Damn her. He could not touch Cersei, he knew. Not yet. Not even if he'd wanted to. And he was far from certain that he did. Yet it rankled to sit here and make a mummer's show of justice by punishing the sorry likes of Janus Slint and Allard Deem, while his sister continued on her savage course.
In future, you will tell me what you know, Lord Varys, all of what you know.
The eunuch's smile was sly.
That might take rather a long time, my good lord. I know quite a lot.
Not enough to save this child, it would seem.
Alas, no. There was another bastard, a boy, older. I took steps to see him removed from harm's way, but I confess I never dreamed the babe would be at risk. A base-born girl, less than a year old, with a whore for a mother. What threat could she pose?
She was Robert's, Tyrion said bitterly. That was enough for Cersei, it would seem.
Yes, it is grievous said. I must blame myself for the poor sweet babe and her mother, who was so young and loved the king.
Did she? Tyrion had never seen the dead girl's face, but in his mind she was Shae and Tysha both.
Can a whore truly love anyone, I wonder?
No, don't answer. Some things I would rather not know. He had settled Shae in a sprawling stone and timber manse, with its own well and stable and garden. He had given her servants to see to her wants,
a white bird from the summer isles to keep her company, silks and silver and gemstones to adorn her, guards to protect her. And yet she seemed restive. She wanted to be with him more, she told him. She wanted to serve him and help him.
You helped me most year, between the sheets, he told her one night after their loving as he lay beside her, his head pillowed against her breast, his groin aching with a sweet soreness. She made no reply, save with her eyes. He could see there that it was not what she wanted to hear. Sighing, Tyrion reached for the wine again, then remembered Lord Janus and pushed the flagon away.
It does seem my sister was telling the truth about Stark's death. We have my nephew to thank for that madness.
King Joffrey gave the command. Janus Slint and Sir Ilyen Payne carried it out, swiftly, without hesitation.
Almost as if they had expected it. Yes, we have been over this ground before, without profit, a folly.
With the city watch in hand, my lord, you are well placed to see to it that his grace commits no further follies. To be sure, there is still the Queen's household guard to consider.
The Red Cloaks, Tyrion shrugged. Velar's loyalty is to Casterly Rock. He knows I'm here, with my father's authority. Cersei would find it hard to use his men against me. Besides, there are only 100. I have half again as many men of my own. And 6,000 gold cloaks, if Bywater is the man you claim.
You will find Sir Jestlin to be courageous, honorable, obedient, and most grateful.
To whom, I wonder?
Tyrion did not trust Varys, though there was no denying his value. He knew things beyond a doubt.
Why are you so helpful, my lord Varys? He asked, studying the man's soft hands, the bald, powdered face, the slimy little smile.
You are the hand. I serve the realm, the king, and you.
As you serve John Arryn and Eddard Stark.
I serve Lord Arryn and Lord Stark as best I could. I was saddened and horrified by their most untimely deaths.
Think how I feel. I'm like to be next.
Oh, I think not, Varys said, swirling the wine in his cup. Par is a curious thing, my lord. Perchance you have considered the riddle I posed you that day in the inn.
It has crossed my mind a time or two, Tyrion admitted. The king, the priest, the rich man, who lives and who dies? Who will the swordsman obey? It's a riddle without an answer, or rather, too many answers. All depends on the man with the sword.
And yet he is no one. Varys said. He has neither crown, nor gold, nor favor of the gods, only a piece of pointed steel.
That piece of steel is the power of life and death.
Just so. Yet, if it is the swordsmen who rule us in truth, why do we pretend our kings hold the power? Why should a strong man with a sword ever obey a child king like Joffrey? Or a wine-sodden oaf like his father.
Because these child kings and drunken oafs can call other strong men with other swords.
Then these other swordsmen have the true power, or do they? Whence came their swords? Why do they obey?
Varys smiled.
Some say knowledge is power. Some say that all power comes from the gods. Others say it derives from law. Yet that day, on the steps of Baelor Sept, our godly High Septon and the lawful Queen Regent and your ever so knowledgeable servant were as powerless as any cobbler or cooper in the crowd. Who truly killed Eddard Stark, do you think? Joffrey? Who gave the command? Sir Ilyen Payne, who swung the sword, or another?
Tyrion cocked his head sideways.
Did you mean to answer your damned riddle, or only to make my head ache worse?
Varys smiled. Here, then, power resides where men believe it.